Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Lee Newcomb, liberal Mary Hartigan, and Sean Bennett of the Log Cabin Republicans of Illinois. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago, snowy, bitter cold, Chicago, Illinois, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email a comment to us, it is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web or watch this program days after we do it every week on the web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, there's lots to talk about, including what I think some liberals and conservatives would agree was maybe one of the most bizarre moments, certainly in White House history, just within the last week, and that was the appearance of former President Bill Clinton at the White House. And we're going to talk about that in just a little bit of a moment, because obviously he was there to help Barack Obama deal with some of the political flack that he's been getting from the political left and the Democrat members of the House, primarily over his deal on the tax cut with Republicans. We're going to show a clip of that in just a little bit for those who are watching our program tonight on television. But again, Mary Hartigan, you're our card-carrying Democrat, liberal Democrat. You wear that banner very proudly. You were a supporter of Barack Obama long before it was fashionable. Your reaction to what the president did last week, did it disappoint you, or do you understand the practical situation that he is in?
What I want is I want what's best for the country. And so I don't care how it looks for a particular person. And so I think what's best for the country is that people pay their fair share. And when you have a situation where people are trying not to pay their fair share, I'll take any ally I can. I don't care whether it's Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Jim DeMint. Couldn't care less. I want what's fair.
Lee Newcomb is our card-carrying conservative Republican. Did we see the president in an absolute moment of cave-in last week?
Somewhat. I like the analysis that I've heard that he wants to be a two-term president, and this is what it was about, because if this massive tax increase that's going to happen as of January the 1st, if this massive tax increase kicks in, it's going to put the economy in an absolute tank, and there's no way he'll be reelected in 2 years. So he did what he needed to do to try and survive politically, whatever his base says.
Sean Bennett is the president of the Illinois chapter of the Log Cabin Republicans, which is a Republican organization of gay and lesbians around the United States. Your reaction, was it a pure politics?
I think that he was probably quite concerned about how things went for Bill Clinton when, during the midterm elections, the control of Congress switched, and knew that if he didn't sort of work towards some more bipartisan efforts with the Republican factions, that he was going to hit a brick wall for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Bill Clinton, he was at the White House for a long, this was allegedly a meeting that had been scheduled several weeks in advance. And last week you had the presence of the president and the former president at the White House at the same time. Here's a little clip of that, exactly what happened, that exchange.
Every moment. I just had a terrific meeting with the former president, President Bill Clinton, and we just happened to have this as a topic of conversation. And I thought, given the fact that he presided over as good an economy as we've seen in our lifetimes, that it might be useful for him to share some of his thoughts. I'm going to let him speak very briefly. And then I've actually got to go over and do some, just one more Christmas party. He may decide he wants to take some questions, but I want to make sure that you guys heard from him directly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. First of all, I feel awkward being here, and now you're going to leave me all by myself. Let me just say a couple of things. First of all,
Sean, you said when you came in here before we went on the air that was one of the most bizarre moments of political theater that you've ever witnessed.
Yes,
elaborate, if you will.
And only surpassed in being even more bizarre in that Bill Clinton still remembered all the members of the press and was pointing at them and calling them by name. But,
and that President Obama actually used the words very briefly when he talked about Clinton's ability to speak. He actually thought he was going to speak very briefly.
And anyone who's ever seen President Clinton speak knows that he couldn't get off television in less than an hour, right? I mean, I think he was up there for 25 minutes before they sort of wrapped it up with mm-hmm. him, right?
Right. Mary, your reaction?
Well, like,
smart move or does this... Does this inoculate him from those who may still believe that Barack Obama will somehow be challenged from the left in 2012?
Well, I think that's foolish. I mean, that's not really going to happen. I don't know. I've never talked to a live person outside of the Beltway media who thinks that that is any kind. I mean, that's a dream that they have. It's not happening. The thing is, I think it's irrelevant. I think what really counts is that the bankers got a bailout, and then they got a bonus from the taxpayers, and they're looking for another bonus now. And the people on the left don't want to give them a bonus, but there are corporate people in the Republican Party and corporate Democrats who want to give another bonus and another bailout to really rich people. And they don't want them to make to contribute a fair amount. It was fair during. They want to go back to a tax rate that was the same as it was during the Clinton era. In when John F. Kennedy was president, the highest marginal tax rate was 90%. So you and in the 60s and 70s, America did just fine. So these people are looking for a free war. They're looking for free highways, for free courts, for a free army. They don't want to pay for anything, and they just want a free ride. And I think that they should have to pay for the services that they consume and that we all consume as part of a free country.
Lee,
Mary, I think your language is utterly, totally, and completely sleazy and dishonest, and I'll tell you why. Because instead of talking to me,
really feel?
Instead of talking to me like you respect me, and instead of talking to our listeners like you respect them, and you think that they're people that can think for themselves, you've just spoken to me and our listeners like you think we're a bunch of morons. They want to do this, and they want to do that, and they want to get away with this. Who's they, Mary? I'll tell you who they is.
You
spoke for a long time.
Let me
speak, Mary. I didn't interrupt you. They are people like me, not high-income, middle-class people, who have a little bit of an education in economics and a little bit of knowledge that when you massively increase taxes on wealth producers, you get a recession and a depression.
So, and everybody would dump their stocks.
People that earn their own money shouldn't have to say that you get to steal it because you want to portray them as evil.
I want to come back in lazy.
In this
holiday spirit that has just exploded before you in our first segment. We'll continue it in segment number two coming up from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and I want to talk a little bit more about the politics of what happened last week again. It seems to me that this was a brilliant move on the part of President Obama because his road to re-election has got to be with some moderate Republicans, many of whom switched over and voted for him, certainly independents. And the way to do that is to demonstrate that you're willing to compromise on some particular issues. And also, I think some of the information indicated that some of those independents were also fairly wealthy. Certainly some of the moderate Republicans were wealthy. They liked his position on social issues. And so that really what this was really all about was just, you know, trying to keep that piece of his general election base in place, Mary, and believing that whoever runs on the Republican Party in 2012 is going to be more conservative than he is. And, you know, those who are left of center are going to have no place else to go. So you make a deal with the devil. And as you say, you've taken three giant steps towards the center.
Well, I don't think it's toward the center. I think he was in the center to begin with. Also, I have to say that it doesn't matter how many steps he takes to the right. He won't get a single Republican vote out of it. This week, every single Republican in the Senate voted against health care for the 9/11 first responders and workers. Every single Republican.
No, but,
and next
what
week, we're going to see the same thing on START, and we're going to see the same thing on the taxes. This whole so-called compromise, I'd like to see how many actual Republican votes he gets.
I was thinking of Republican voters, not necessarily votes on a congressional vote, but I'm looking beyond that to 2012, when the people who are electing the next president of the United States are people who are sometimes casually involved in politics. They don't follow it like everybody at this table.
I disagree. I think in 2012, people are going to look at what he did on health care, and they're going to say that was a socialist maneuver, that bill, that behemoth of a health care bill, which included things like tax reporting, 1099 forms, and everything else, that they're going to say, no, this is not a centrist president. Even if he tried to do something last week in a newly elected Congress, they're going to see that as, because otherwise they weren't going to move forward on anything until the tax cut bill was done.
And also on your issue, we should say, your issue is don't ask, don't tell.
Yes.
The repeal of don't ask. When you were here last week, it looked like there was going to be some movement on it.
Yes.
The movement that happened this week, it was moving away from what you wanted.
Well, I was concerned about Harry Reid forcing the bill to the floor to get cloture on the measure. We had Republican support on the bill. We had enough to bring it over the 60 number to avoid a filibuster. In the end, it turns out that they're going to end up having this standalone bill, SB 4022, and that's going to end up being a bill that is just about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's not about the entire Defense Act.
Now, Susan Collins, who is one of the Republicans in the Senate who's for it, she thinks that's a better, cleaner way to get what you want.
Well, if you look at the amount of time that they wanted to discuss the amendments on the Defense Act and the amount of time historically it takes to pass a defense bill, there may have been a point. There's a lot of other legislation that they want to get done during the lame duck session. So I do think that perhaps we have a shot at getting Don't Ask, Don't Tell passed now that it's a standalone bill. I think they're willing to introduce it, finish the tax cut bill, and then come back to it. They're going to do a Rule 14 maneuver on it to skip committees.
What does that mean?
That means that it doesn't have to go through the full committee process in the Senate. That means they can bring it then to a vote for cloture. If they get the 60 votes, then they can go forward with an actual vote on it. And they know that in the House, Pelosi has the numbers in order to be able to repeal Don't Ask.
Lee Newcomb, your reaction to that? If they go through that maneuver, the maneuvers that Sean has just described, what is going to be the reaction, in your view, of the American people and the Republican base, the core Republican base?
Well, I think, generally, it'll be negative, but that's not really the concern to me. The concern to me is what is the reaction of people in the military. Because I think that reaction is going to be, according to all of the polling currently done of military people, going to be extremely negative. We know from the surveys done of military people that up to 30% of military families have said in recent surveys that they would urge their service member not to reenlist.
What surveys are you referring to?
There have been surveys done by the Family Research Council and by the Center for Defense Readiness, both done of military personnel.
And
there are also, by the way, the surveys that were done that were presented to Congress a couple of weeks ago, people only heard of some of the top things like this 70% figure that they give, support it. That's not at all true. And you have to go down to, I believe it's the 46th page, to come to the part where the members of the commission write that it is the overwhelming response from their personal interviews of service members that service members are opposed to it.
He's speaking specifically of the reaction of the Marine Corps component of the bill.
I am not. I am speaking overall of service.
And 70% of people in, who responded to the survey, which were 26% of the people who received the survey, which meant that there was probably a negative response bias in the survey, still didn't think that there would be a problem with Don't Ask, Don't Tell being repealed or going through the procedures that were outlined in the report.
Actually, both things that you just said are not true. First, the 70% is the addition of several cohorts in that. 70% did not say that there wouldn't be a problem. To get to the 70%, you have to add those who didn't had no opinion with those who said there wouldn't be a problem. The actual number is actually nearing 60% that thought no problem to a problem. The second problem is with that survey is that that survey, most people don't know. When I was in college, I remember in statistics, I took a class and there was a textbook. And the textbook was titled Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics. People who don't understand how these are done might not realize how it's done. There are ways to influence surveys.
But would you also acknowledge that some people might look at any survey as done by the Family Research Council, which is a very politically oriented organization, just as if something was a survey was done by, the ACLU.
Sure.
I mean, people would look at that and say, well, you know, maybe this the finger was on the scale.
I wouldn't blame them for that.
Mary, you had a comment.
But the problem is how is it taken?
I would say that it will be just the same problem that our allies in Israel and in the United Kingdom have had, which is it was a Y2K event, a complete nothing, because we did just like with Y2K. All of the electric utilities and all the gas utilities and all the big computer people did the prep in advance. Our military says that if they do the preparation in advance, it's not going to be a problem. And the real issue on the survey,
the real issue on the survey
was that 90% of the people who said that they had believed that they had served with a GLBT person were in favor of repealing. So people who feel that they had served were really okay with it.
This entire debate is based on false statements like she just made. She just said 90% of the people approved of this.
No, 90% of the people who said that they believed they had served with a GLBT person in the armed services said that they were in favor of repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
90% of the people didn't say they approved.
You're deliberately taking my answer and leaving out a key
I agree with.
Folks, before we get into dueling statistics here.
Dueling answers.
And some dueling interpretation of statistics. Lee, where do you, when the Joint Chiefs of Staff and General Petraeus, who I know you greatly admire, when they come out and support this, as does Robert Gates, when they come out and support this, how do you react to them?
Are they
just doing it because they were told to do it politically? And the only member of the services who is not on board with this is the Commandant of the Marine Corps, who also was on record as saying is if it becomes the law of the land, we will enforce it like everyone else enforces it.
Well, of course he would say that. That's what he's supposed to do.
That's right.
Well, first of all, I don't accept your premise, Bruce. The Joint Chiefs of Staff, every single one of them, advised not to overturn the policy. That is true. Every one of their testimony last week, every single one of the Joint Chiefs said in one way or another, I would advise you not overturn the policy right now. They all said this needs to wait. It needs to have more time. The second thing we need to understand is that for Secretary Gates, in the United States Military Command, you cannot count on the word of what the true word of the military is by talking about current officers in the military or current political appointees. I'm not saying that as a way of trying to diminish people. I'm saying that's one of the major things here that people do not understand is the military culture, and that is what people are not talking about. The United States Congress in 1993 on this issue issued findings in a Democratic Congress by a vote that was an overwhelming veto-proof majority. The Congress said that the military culture of the United States is uniquely different than the civilian culture.
The reason
I'm not, I just, but no, I want to answer
your
question.
And Colin Powell has since come back. And Colin Powell has said that he thought in retrospect that the policy was a mistake and needed to be repealed. I think that when you look at what you have in terms of a military culture, I don't think it's an unfair question to ask whether or not having people serve openly and honestly with their peers is better for the morale and the culture of their unit than having them have to hide things about their personal life.
The vast majority of research says that's not true.
When we come back, we're going to ask the question that I know a lot of those who are tuned in this issue want to know is, why doesn't the president just sign an executive order and change the rule, like Harry Truman did, about the integration of the services? Why not do it that way? We're going to get that answer when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about tax cuts, the extension of tax cuts, when we come back from Chicago, as well as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. From Sausalito to Sandusky, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289 on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM Satellite Radio. And happy to report that we have inked a new deal with Sirius XM Satellite Radio. It didn't get quite the publicity of Howard Stern's renewal, but nor are they going to miss up the checks, I'll tell you that much. But again, we're delighted to add another couple of years being able to be with you every Sunday night on the Sirius XM Satellite Radio, as well as on many of America's great terrestrial radio stations. Mary Hardigan joins us tonight. She's our card-carrying liberal, longtime supporter of Barack Obama, long before it was fashionable, I might say. And she is an attorney in private practice. Lee Newcomb also joins us. Once upon a time, he was with the Christian Coalition in Chicago and in the Illinois area. He is now the recorder in McLean County, which is in central Illinois. And he has made a long, long drive to be here tonight from central Illinois. We appreciate all your hours on the road to get here tonight. And Sean Bennett also joins us. Sean Bennett is the Illinois chapter president of the Log Cabin Republicans. That is a gay and lesbian group that supports Republican causes. He is also a noted concert pianist. He was a child prodigy. He's an entrepreneur. Was it a Gates scholarship you're involved with? The Gates Foundation, was it a? It's a scholarship, and you taught at Oxford?
At Cambridge.
Cambridge, I'm sorry. Yeah. And I'm not sorry that you taught there, but you have incredible credentials. My question to you is this. There are many people listening to this evening who are obviously Republicans coast to coast. They may not know that it was really the Log Cabin Republicans that legally have been pushing the issue of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
That is correct.
And they want to know, why would a Republican organization do that?
Well, I think that they looked at the issue starting in 2004, filed suit on behalf of some of their own members who were either discharged from the military honorably or dishonorably, and felt that this was a discriminatory policy, and one which did not reflect the kind of liberties and values which the Republican Party espouses.
Lee Newcomb, do you think that was a worthy thing for a Republican organization to do?
I don't think it's a worthy thing for any organization to do. In order to have this debate about Don't Ask, Don't Tell in any kind of rational way, I think we need to start with two questions that almost nobody asked to talk about it. The first is, what is the mission of the United States military? And then the second question, based upon that, is, what will this change in policy do to either help or hinder that mission of the United States military? Sean, what's the purpose of the U.S. military?
I would say to protect and defend the United States of America from foreign enemies.
Okay. The Congress of the United... Or Mary, what do you think the purpose of the military is?
It's to promote the Constitution of America through armed, when armed conflict is necessary. And it's to be a representative of our country and to be a representative of our Constitution, which means that a fully integrated military and a military that is under civilian control is paramount.
Okay. For all of our listeners, the description you just heard perfectly captures this debate over this issue. The United States Congress, in its 1993 findings, where it describes what's the purpose of the military, says the purpose of the military is one thing, and that's what the purpose of the military really is. The purpose of the military is to engage in combat and win wars. That's exactly what it's there for.
Actually, now, that isn't what military doctrine is. Military doctrine is that that armed conflict is a tactic and an overall strategy.
Let's cut to the chase. What you're basically saying is you do not believe that gays or lesbians can participate in that war and do not hold the same abilities that those heterosexuals do.
I didn't say that at all,
you don't want them to serve.
Correct.
Okay. And you don't want them to serve because what is it that you fear they're going to do if they want to serve?
I mean,
here are people who are willing to die for their country.
Okay.
And you're saying, you know what, I'm not going to give you that right other American has, but you don't deserve that right. Why?
According to the United States Congress, Bruce, what you just said is not true. If you read the 1993 findings, they say the military is not something that the ordinary citizen is part of. They say that
the culture selective service registration for every 18-year-old male in the United States.
United States Congress wrote that.
Congress is full of baloney.
Okay, no,
just because the Congress said it in 1993 doesn't mean that that's the historical precedent for what the military is.
The point. This is the problem.
My family's
folks.
Part of the military. I'm part of the military. What's the? I mean, if
there are plenty
go?
Of gays and lesbians who have served in the military in the closet, and it wasn't known to anybody.
If we care about the military first, not my opinion, not your opinion, or your opinion. This is about the people in the military. It's about them. And if you look at the
why
military,
should it be about
so how
them
have they been
first?
Harmed?
Why should it be about them first?
Because they have, according to the Congress and everything, it's not Lee Newcomb's opinion. It's the findings written about the role of military life. And military life is uniquely different than civilian life. The Congress described the fact that in the field, military members are placed in extraordinary positions of Spartan living conditions and physical intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that all Spartan. Of their studies... Yes. Oh, my goodness, Mary. Don't do something
I mean,
like
come
that.
On.
That's the words of the Congress, Mary. Spartan living conditions and extremely Spartan conditions.
Right,
finish
the point here. I'm missing
the point.
The point
is, when you place human beings that are fighting a battle into those conditions, we do not have the time on this program to go on the implications of a homosexual person in that. After 12 long hearings of a democratically controlled United States Congress looking into this issue, not the kind of quick slam-bam thing that they're trying to do right now in the Congress, but after lengthy hearings, a totally Democratic-controlled Congress during 1993 in the Clinton administration voted in a veto-proof majority to make homosexual service in the military not don't ask, don't tell. The actual law makes it illegal.
Here's my question to you, Sean.
Yes.
If someone is homosexual and they are currently serving in the military now,
yes.
And they haven't been drilled out of the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
Their behavior has not forced a dishonorable discharge.
Yes.
They're serving their country, and they're living a homosexual lifestyle, but it's not displayed amongst the fellow troops. What's wrong with continuing that?
I think.
Does it work? Does don't ask, don't tell, the current policy, is it working?
Don't ask, don't tell does not work precisely for the reason that it undermines troop morale by encouraging people to be dishonest with their fellow members in the military. I think that if you look at gays who are serving now but not open about their sexual orientation, a lot of them, their fellow troops know already. They just choose not to make an issue of it.
Mary?
I mean, as a national security thing, what is more blackmailable than somebody who is in a position of knowing a lot of America's secrets, where they have a secret that they can lose their whole livelihood and their whole reason for their work and everything for? I think it's don't ask, don't tell, don't care. I mean, that's. I just don't really see what the workup is. And talking about something that was a finding 20 years ago might have been relevant 20 years ago, it's not
culture,
relevant today.
The military culture is
a wonderful, strong culture, and it is not as divorced from from everyday street America as you think.
Congress said it is completely different than the civilian culture.
It is a culture, Lee, that has evolved over the years. It was a culture that once upon a time did not include women. It was a culture that did not include African Americans. So it is a culture, as the country has evolved, as many of the institutions of the country have evolved over years. This is the transition from where we are right now to where the policy may be going is part of the evolution of the process.
And why can't we trust the members of the military to tell us what they think?
Well, because I'm not so sure. If you were to have taken a survey in the previous transformation, mm-hmm. I believe that in 1948, if you would have taken a survey of the troops, first of all, we don't run the country on the survey of the employees, if you will. People can elect or throw out mm-hmm. members of Congress.
Can they military?
But the point is, no, they can't do it in the military.
They
can't do it in the military. And had they taken a survey back in 1948, there would be no blacks in the U.S. military service. If they would have taken a survey about whether women should serve, the answer would not have passed. Some things don't go up to a vote. When you enter the military, you enter the military to fight for your country, for where your commander-in-chief tells you to go, and you choose to follow orders. If you're not prepared to do that, you should not be in the military. You should find some other form of serving your country if you don't want to do that. If not, following orders is what you do when you enter the military.
If this issue was that simple, why have nearly 1,100 flag and senior officers who have retired signed a petition to the Obama administration to not overturn this policy? Why are almost unanimously flag and senior officers who are retired? Remember, officers
as opposed to the 110,000 who replied to the survey who didn't have a problem with gays or lesbians serving in the military?
Once again, that survey, I'll explain why that survey is completely one of those damn statistics.
We're going to talk more about specifics, and we got a lot of callers on the line. Let's hear from them. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from Coast to Coast and Border to Border, back shortly from Chicago. From Tulsa, Oklahoma to Raleigh, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers on the line. Let's go to Wheeling, Illinois. That is a suburb of Chicago. Let's go to Chris, listening to on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, gentlemen and lady, I'm sorry. Mr. Newcomb, everybody knows, of course, that a Negro is not equal to a white man. And how dare you say that a Negro should sleep with white men? And how dare you say that white men should have to obey the orders of a Negro? How dare you say something like that?
What?
In 1948, Truman gave an order. The generals said, yes, sir. They carried out the orders, and the military was integrated. And guess what? You know, you can't hide the color of your skin. People, it's really obvious. You know, you can see it from a mile away. But, you know, whether someone's sexual, you know, proclivities are not necessarily tattooed on his shoulder, on his back, or doesn't wear a sign saying that I'm gay. And they didn't take a survey. They gave an order. He gave an order, and the military obeyed their order. That's what the military does, Mr. Mm-hmm. Newcomb.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, you castigated Lee, but you know what? I think the political question really is to Sean. Sean, there's a president. He campaigned throughout the primary. He promised he was going to favor a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Mm-hmm. Then he gets in and he passes the buck to Congress. In your opinion, whether you want to speak for yourself or the log cabin Republicans, why should President Clinton just executive order do it?
I think President Obama has had the opportunity to do an executive order on this. He could have done it in February when he issued a presidential proclamation saying that Don't Ask, Don't Tell needed to be repealed by the end of the year. However, I think that his attitude about it is probably that repealing it through a congressional action, since it was enacted by a congressional action, is a stronger and more permanent way to show that Don't Ask, Don't Tell be repealed than simply an executive order that could possibly be rescinded the first day someone else is
Mary,
in office.
Is this another cave-in on the part of the president?
I think that that's putting words in people's mouth. I think that that Sean's right, that it's a more permanent way. We've seen other things that are socially that social conservatives have used as a football that go back and forth between administrations based on executive orders. And I think this we should just get it done with.
Lee Newcomb, a question to you. Judging the way that the courts have ruled around the country, including on this particular subject in California, if Congress does not act on this, isn't a court going to decide this sooner than later?
I don't know, but I do know that this entire debate is filled with skewing it away so people don't know what's really going on. Both of my friends here have discussed, and you have discussed, executive orders. This was not an executive order by President Clinton. This is public law 103-160,
you
section 654. It's a public law.
But here, you
that's
keep
what
going.
We're talking about.
As an executive
you can't
order.
Overturn a public law with an executive order.
You can
order.
In the military.
No, you cannot.
Yes, you can. It's
yes,
done
can.
Quite frequently.
It is never.
Executive
you
orders
can,
are issued
executive
and those
orders
hold the same amount of law.
Overturn a law.
They have
as commander-in-chief, he can.
They have to be veto-proof majority in Congress in order to override the executive order.
I think that that's
overriding executive order. Mary, you're a lawyer. You know that a presidential executive order cannot overturn a public law passed by Congress. You know that.
I have one word: waterboarding.
Don't change the subject, Mary.
As a commander in
Mary,
chief,
you're an attorney. Mary, answer my question.
No, you know what, Lee, yeah. You're the recorder. You're a recorder. She's a lawyer. Let her respond to this issue, and then we'll go back to you.
Republicans say that as commander-in-chief, that the commander-in-chief has almost unlimited authority. And John Yoo, for example, says that as commander-in-chief, that the president has the ability to order a United States soldier to crush the testicles of a child in order to get his parent to confess to a crime, that he has that executive order, that he can do that. That is against every law. I believe it's against the Constitution. I believe that's incorrect. But you can't be somebody who is a lover of everything that the military can do and then say you can't issue an executive order on this. I think that Congress should pass the law. I don't think that an executive order is proper.
But what
in
about
this
the
situation.
Courts? I mean, isn't all the reaction from Congress and isn't all the, you know, the study commission that was set in motion to offer the report post-December after the election, wasn't that all a legislative response to what's happening in the courts?
No.
And if you look at other countries.
I think it's what's happening in the country. And what's
Yeah, if you look at how other countries have dealt with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the ones that allow open service of gays and lesbians in their militaries, who, by the way, fight alongside their allies in the United States without too much issue. These laws were changed primarily through, first, judicial action, followed by a stay of the procedure, and then some sort of legislative action by the parliamentary bodies of those countries.
Which is what's happening right
which
now.
Which is exactly what's happening in the United States.
Based on the California judge.
So U.S. Military rules are following exactly the same protocol that was followed in all these other countries that have repealed their versions of no gays or lesbians serving in the military.
For our
John, we're going to go to John in Chicago. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Why is that not an example for the U.S. military is the question.
Hello?
Go ahead, John.
Yes, I'm calling in support of Mr. Newcomb. I'm a former Marine infantryman. And I'm citing some liberal statistics from the Kinsey Institute to support Newcomb. Bell and Weinberg found that 28% of homosexuals in
John,
their study.
John, excuse me for interrupting, but we're at the end of this first hour, but I know you've been waiting a long time. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to start the second hour with your call, I promise you.
All right.
We have a lot of callers on the line. Some They seem to be on both sides of this issue. We're going to have to say farewell. If you're listening to us on radio, stay tuned. John's going to finish his point following the network news. If you're watching this program on television, we're going to see you next week. We will continue with our guests. Mary Hardigan is here. Sean Bennett from the Log Cabin Republicans. And Lee Newcomb is here, our card-carrying conservative. They'll all be back in the next hour again. For radio, we've got another full hour and lots of calls on this subject. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Continuing with hour number two this evening, featuring commentary by conservative Lee Newcomb, liberal Mary Hardigan, and Sean Bennett of the Log Cabin Republicans of Illinois. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. Our email address, btb@museum.tv. And we've been talking about the tax cuts, the problems that President Obama has with his liberal base, if indeed he has many problems. A lot of liberals, at least according to the Beltway pundits, they're all up in arms. We haven't heard from any of them this evening. If you are a liberal who is really offended by the tax deal that the president made with the Republicans last week, let's hear from you. And also, we've been talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We've been talking a lot about statistics, and we've gotten sort of sometimes bogged down with statistical discussions. But we do have some anecdotal people that are calling in, providing their perspective. John from Chicago, who was on the phone with us before we broke. And we're now going to bring you back into the discussion to continue to make you the case upon which we will all respond. Go ahead, John. Thanks for standing
thank
by.
You. I'm addressing this from the point of view of unit cohesion and health implications, but the Alfred E. Kinsey Institute, which certainly is not conservative, in a 1970 survey, 71, found that 28% of homosexuals had over 1,000 lifetime partners, and 15% had between 500 and 1,000, and 32% between 100 and 500. Now, the gay lifestyle has much more acceptance now. There were constraints on it at that time, so I think the statistics would even be higher on the unfavorable side. And that's really all I have to say. I think
John, let me ask you this question, and then we'll let everybody respond.
Sure, sure.
But if we were to look at the demographics of the American military, take sexuality or sexual preference out of it, and you're talking about young men and or women who are between the ages of 18 and, let's say, 28, 29 years old. Let's keep them in their 20s. Wouldn't you suggest that perhaps some of the heterosexuals in the American military would also have numerous conquests that they would include as part of their sexual history?
Well, it depends on how much liberty you got. I was in a combat situation. I didn't have that much liberty, so the people I was with, I would say, were strictly limited. I don't think any man, any Marine I knew, had anywhere near, was heading to 1,000 lifetime partners or 500. Most of the contact was with prostitutes, and we were on the move. I mean, in a combat time of police action, you're on the move, and, you know, the men engage with prostitutes and move on.
Yep.
But I don't think.
But if you have if you
engage with prostitutes and move on, don't you also run the risk of having all of the diseases that you are suggesting that somehow are unique to gays? I mean, the reality is if there is a great deal of promiscuity out there, be it heterosexual or homosexual, there you do raise the risk of having a health issue. But it has nothing to do with sexuality. It has everything to do with your sexual drive, proclivity, attractiveness, and libido.
John, I have a question for you.
We'll get everybody to respond. Lee, and then we're going to hear from everybody.
John, an issue that I've done a lot of reading on this, and there are a couple of issues that keep coming up over and over and over that you read about the military. And one concept that I think that most people do not understand, and I don't believe my friends here understand it, is the concept of unit cohesion. Could you explain that to us?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am. You're a Marine, so I'm asking
unit
you,
unit cohesion,
sir.
Means that you trust and have confidence in the individuals you're working with. And if you're in the shower and you have doubts about someone ogling you, that doesn't make for unit cohesion, okay? And also,
and how often has that happened in your life, to you personally?
Well, I can't say how often because, I wasn't in the shower looking around, and there wasn't this
well,
whole
but here's,
issue
I mean,
of homosexuals
the answer,
the only homosexual I knew had rendezvous off base with strangers. It passed through the gate. I was on security at one time. Passed through the gate and be picked up by different men outside the naval shipyard I served at.
John, let's take a break from this discussion. At least the anecdotal evidence that you're discussing, and let's ask Sean to address the issue of perception of gay promiscuity. I mean, that's at the core of John's question. He thinks that somehow gays are more likely to be promiscuous, are more likely to have partners, are more likely to engage in sex, and it can result in a health issue.
I think that with respect to the military, that gays and lesbians who are serving in the military are going to treat it like their job because it's a voluntary military at this time. And that when they're engaged in combat with their heterosexual peers, that they're going to be focused on the incentive at hand, which is to defeat whoever it is that they're trying to defeat. It's not going to have anything to do with what their sexual inclination might be.
And you're not likely to join the service just to be in a shower with a lot of naked guys. You could do that at the health club.
What do military experts say? Sean, you seem like a really bright guy, and I really like you. But I really don't care about your opinion, and I don't care about Mary's opinion. What I care about is the military's opinion. They are the people that have to do things that you and I do not have to do.
So what is it about foreign militaries that have open gay and lesbian service have to say about this? They don't seem to be doing very poorly.
I can answer that very clearly. Very clearly, if you look at the explanations that the homosexual lobby is using this very argument on foreign militaries. In fact, those foreign militaries are not analogous at all to the United States
then
military.
Why do they serve alongside American military in combat? They do
why
in Afghanistan.
Is, why,
and in
a, but why,
do you know? Do you know one of the
why
militaries?
Is, why is the unit cohesion that you mm-hmm. talk about? Mm-hmm. Why is the unit cohesion of a U.S. military troop any different than the same needs for a member of the Israeli, German, French, British army, or scores of other armies around the world?
They are very different. They are different.
Or even take special forces. Take special forces units, which are more analogous as far as what you're talking about. Just from
good analogy.
So take special forces and take the British special forces, for example. And there are a lot of openly serving.
Really?
Yeah.
In special forces?
Yeah.
Mary, you don't know what you're talking about.
They're on the cover of the magazines.
One of the very arguments that shows.
It gets better.
One of the very arguments.
Has somebody who is serving.
One of the very arguments that shows you are wrong is the very fact that in the militaries that have open homosexuality, in the special forces of those militaries, homosexuals are not allowed to serve.
That is not correct.
In the French Foreign Legion, that is absolutely true. In the British Special Forces, that is absolutely true.
We're going to come back and talk about that. I think you have an experience with that. Sean, we'll hear from it when we come back.
Yes.
1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Your experiences, if any, gays in the military. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, whether it will be repealed. And before we get back into the specifics of what happens in trench warfare and whether or not gays in the military are going to be any more promiscuous than anyone else in the 18 to 24 range, from a political standpoint, Sean Bennett, what do you think will happen next? Do you think there's going to be another run at this before the end of this calendar year, or do you think the next big battle is somewhere in the future?
I think that provided that the tax bill is passed, that they will make the time for the standalone bill to be introduced through Rule 14 in the Senate and voted upon. And then if that happens and they have an extra day or so, they will be able to get that motion passed in the House.
In an article in Politico, it basically said that in discussion with leaders of the Human Rights Campaign, mm-hmm. that there has been criticism of their conduct of the way this has been managed. The Human Rights Campaign is a national organization primarily supporting gay and lesbian causes at the national and state levels. That there's criticism growing that maybe they have totally misplayed this issue. They may have been too acquiescent to a slow road that was chosen by Barack Obama after he was elected President of the United States. And that there's a growing number of gays and lesbians who are major donors, primarily to the Democratic Party, who have said basically that they will be looking to the Democrats, and they're not going to be giving them political cover, and they're not going to be contributing to their political campaigns, those that are up in 2012, unless this issue is dealt with this calendar year, because it is less likely to be dealt with when Republicans can take control of the United States House.
And certainly January. Barack Obama had the opportunity prior to the midterm elections to pressure Congress to move this bill forward, and he chose not to for political reasons, and that is why it's being addressed now during the lame duck session. That said, Log Cabin Republicans nationally has brought the most strong judicial case for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and in some ways that is what is pressuring the move for this to get done. I want to see Barack Obama make good on his State of the Union address promise that by the end of this calendar year, one way or another, Don't Ask, Don't Tell will fall.
Question for you, Sean. This is an emotional debate, and unfortunately we're not able to get into a lot of the things that are written that most people can't access about why this is so bad for the military. But I think you would give me that there's a lot of very substantive arguments by people that this is very bad to change this policy. That's not your opinion, I grant you that. But there are a lot of very substantive arguments that this is a very bad change in policy for the military.
So I wouldn't agree with you that I think that those arguments are substantive.
I'm not talking about your opinion and my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you know, there are over 1,000 former flag and senior officers of the military that have authored a petition not to overturn this. The Joint Chiefs, every single one of the four, said that they didn't advise they do this right now. My question is to you. This is an extremely important issue to the culture of the U.S. military, they say. Not my opinion. The military says this is an extremely important issue.
But when you, but
if
Lee,
they
you,
say
Lee,
it's that important,
Lee,
why does it keep, have to be slammed
and,
through?
And I want to correct
Lee,
that, Trev.
You keep talking about the military as if it is
yes.
one big monolithic group, and it is not. You talk about 1,000 staff officers. All of the major leaders, those who've made it to the top of the rung, including one of the most admired men in America, who is General David Petraeus, as well as Colin Powell, two pretty credible guys. They have said they support the overturn of this.
Why would Petraeus had not said it like that?
No.
But as
far as I know, General David Petraeus is serving. He is viewed as, by, just a moment, he has been viewed by a Republican president and by a Democratic president as being a brilliant military strategist. He has said, as well as the Secretary of Defense, as well as many others, they basically said, this is a policy that it's okay to change this. Now, we should also mention that also involves a change in the thinking of Colin Powell. because when it was administered 17 years ago, he favored the policy. It's 17 years later. He has changed his mind. Now, has he changed his mind because he's reacting to political pressure? You may argue that he is. But the reality is, when you say the military, you know, part of the answer to your question about, you know, about flag staff officers, why they're opposed to it, they may be of a certain age, they may be of a certain generation, where they oppose anything that looks like change.
And
by the way, I think that would have a lot to do with maybe some of the views of even John McCain on this issue in recent weeks. Because if you would have asked John McCain the same issue 2 years ago, John McCain was generally viewed as, you know, changing don't ask, don't tell was okay.
And not only that, he was asked questions during the formation of the survey instrument that went out to the 400,000 members of the military, of which 26% responded. When it came back, he said, well, the survey shouldn't have been about how we should make this orderly transition. The survey should have been about whether or not we should repeal this policy. But that is not what he said when they were constructing the survey.
Look, there's a reason he didn't say that. I first want to answer Bruce's question. Bruce, I want to be consistent and honest. To me, this is not about Lee Newcomb's opinion. This is about what's good for the military. In my office, I don't know. I wouldn't care what the sexual orientation of my employees is.
Have you been in the military?
No, I have not.
And wouldn't you think the best people to be in the military would be those who can most intelligently defeat their cohorts?
No,
and wouldn't some of those people come from the gay community?
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
But if you're talking about...
You asked three questions there. I didn't agree with the first one. Okay, go ahead.
But if you're talking about decisions of the military, again, what I'm saying is, if you're talking about the military as a monolithic group, I'll tell you one thing. If the generals, mm-hmm. you surround your, the, there's reasons why they're the generals.
Mm-hmm.
You surround yourself with the generals. You ask the generals to check through the rank and file. Now, are you going to tell me that there isn't somebody in the rank and file that doesn't think this is a good idea? Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
There may be hundreds. There may be thousands of them that feel that way. But it's in the context of whether or not this is a policy that can be implemented, just like the policies of involving, you know, women and minorities were in back in 1948, blacks were in that. It's an evolution of what the military is.
No, it's not.
And in this, well, it is. And the reality is that those things they're asked to be administered. And when they're asked to be administered, you know what? They don't ask the PFC. They don't ask the retired lieutenant colonel. They ask the generals in charge.
There's
and
a reason.
My point is, if it's good enough for David Petraeus, it's good enough for me.
And David Bruce, Petraeus has not discharged anyone under Don't Ask, Don't Tell since the judge's ruling on October 22nd.
There's a fundamental problem with what you're saying. You asked me a question a few minutes ago. I want to be honest, so I want to say I respect Colin Powell's opinion. And the reason I do on this, and I will listen to him on this, is because he is retired military. Most people don't understand that the reason your argument is flawed, Bruce, is because a person serving in the military has given up their right to have a political opinion. When Petraeus and Gates and those people give an opinion, they cannot speak their opinion because they are under the commander-in-chief. They cannot directly speak against the opinion of the commander-in-chief. That is why we
have
to listen.
But a PFC can.
No, he can't either. My daughter is about to enter the United States military.
How are you going to take a survey?
General Monday.
I'm confused by what you're
General
saying.
Monday.
Take a survey and then people aren't supposed to give their answers.
No.
That's completely changed.
General
from what
Monday.
You said
General
how
Monday.
How can you divorce any opinion from something
General
that has a political
Monday,
connotation?
General Monday, the recently retired 30th Commandant of the United States Marine Corps, explained this problem with the survey. He said the troops were told last January when Barack Obama said they were going to do this that they would be consulted. And then in March, both Armed Services Committees of the House and the Senate voted to overturn it. They were surveyed after that vote, and the troops thought it was already a policy. That's what they were responding to, not do you think this should be a policy.
I think all the people who responded to the survey knew it was not yet an official policy. Otherwise, they wouldn't have replied to the
survey.
General
Monday, not you or me, said that the survey was extremely flawed. And General Monday said, if you want to take a survey of the troops, it's easy. When their officers tell them to answer it, 100.
It's hand-waving to say a survey is flawed. Any survey could be flawed by the opinion of one person.
General Monday said 100% of them will respond if they are told to.
Joe in Gurnee, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I paid for law school by doing a tour in the military police. After I got out, I was interested in the topic because it's been debated for decades now. Both the military, both the anti- and pro-integration sides of the argument are dancing around the real issue that is at work here. You're going to have the exact same behavioral problems with gay men integrated into combat units that you have with heterosexual men and women serving in non-combat units. You're going to have sexual harassment, sexual assault, bias in preference of somebody who comes across as opposed to somebody who does not. You're going to have imagined sexual harassment. You're going to have imagined sexual assault. You're going to have false accusations of sexual harassment and assault. All of this is going to make its way into the combat arms. And you can't have that, because when that happens, one man says, I'm going to get even with that guy who's now on point by putting him on point. Or I'm going to get even with that guy because I'm going to shoot the round over his head or somewhere else. Or you're going to get somebody shot fratricide.
Mm-hmm. And that is disruptive to military morale and unit cohesion, right?
He's gone. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers on the line, but you know what? There's room for you. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Some other category.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us around the table. Mary Hartigan is our card-carrying liberal tonight. Lee Newcomb is our card-carrying conservative. And Sean Bennett is here. I guess he's our moderate Republican. He's the chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Log Cabin Republicans. And by the way, a reminder for those of you listening around the country, you know that we are building the new Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, and we've been very fortunate to get some state support, and the building will be completed, but there's more dollars to be raised. And again, we're very happy to announce announce this actually a couple of weeks ago, that Betty White, who is one of the most popular television and personalities in the world today, certainly in the United States, she is a supporter and has offered a very strong testimonial for the work that we're doing here in Chicago. And if you go to the museum website, museum.tv, you can hear the message from Betty White. You can see some of the work that is being done, and your tax-deductible donations will put us over the top, and it will help Betty White help us open the doors to the new Museum of Broadcast Communications. And you'll probably see that and hear that on radio and television in the next several weeks as well. During the break, you made a point about who is being drummed out of the service now for behavior unbecoming the military as it relates to sexual activity.
And I made the point that more women have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell than men. More people during peacetime areas or peacetime on bases not actively in combat have been discharged than people in active combat. And a very significant number of people who are not in combat roles at all, such as linguists in languages that are badly needed in the military, are being discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
How many people have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Approximately 13,000.
13,000?
Mm-hmm.
That's not DOD statistics. According to the DOD, last year there were more than 200,000 people discharged from the U.S. military for all reasons. You know how many people were discharged from all the United States military services for the homosexual
issue? Your question was on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that is the figure that I gave you.
On the sexual orientation issue, how many people out of more than 200,000 discharged from the military were discharged for the reason of sexual orientation? The number is 600.
Your question was,
not
since 19, the implementation 000. Of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there have been 13,000 troops that have been discharged under
over
the
that many years? That sounds reasonable.
That's 13,000 over 17 years.
And not a single one since the judicial ruling on October 22nd.
But that would be 13,000 out of probably a couple of million. So it's an insignificant number.
No, I don't think it's an insignificant number at all. If you look at the percentage of people in the military who are gay and lesbian, which I'll, for the sake of argument, assume for a moment is comparable to the percentage of people in the general population who are gay and lesbian, that is not going to be millions of service members.
Do you know how the discharges from the military, discharges for weight and other issues, are far above that issue?
And how is that relevant?
It's relevant because it shows it's an insignificant number. It's a very, very tiny number.
What is, we've been sort of talking around this all night, and again, I've talked to you about some of your thoughts and beliefs, Lee, but I want to talk a little bit about Sean. Sean, what is the biggest, in your view, misperception that straight people have about the homosexual lifestyle?
I would say that it is a choice rather than something that is innate. Something that gays and lesbians don't wake up one day and decide, gosh, my life would be better if I was gay or lesbian. I think that after some amount of agonizing scrutiny in their own minds, they come to the realization that it isn't something that they decided. I think that that is the key issue that separates people who have issues with the gay and lesbian community from people who don't. It's the perception of whether it is a choice or whether it is something that is innate.
Same sort of question to you is, for those who are opposed to this or civil unions, gay marriage, or the homosexual agenda, whatever some of the other points are above and beyond the 2 points that we're talking about this evening. How many homosexuals do you engage with, do you know, and do you know on a personal level as opposed to a political group that whose political agenda you might oppose, Lee?
I don't mean to disrespect you in the question there, because right. my emotion over what we're talking about now is very different from the public policy question we've been hotly debating for the last hour.
Right.
Okay. You've known me for a lot of years, Bruce, and you know my personal feelings on this.
Right.
I have friends and family members who are gay. You know, that makes no difference to me. I feel very strongly, and I am very strongly offended when I see people who claim the same conservative Christian values that I believe I have, who treat gay people in ways that I believe are disrespectful, discriminatorily, and in ways that get my back up. There is a great deal of difference between talking about human beings and a public policy issue. Sean, I noticed when you said what you said a few minutes ago, our listeners couldn't have seen you, but you talked about people who think what they think about gay people, and you gestured toward me. And then you said people who don't think that way and gestured toward Mary, because those of you at home don't realize we're sitting at a table and Sean is in the middle.
I wasn't looking at either of you. I was
because
looking up.
My personal opinion about the issue of gay people is I believe very strongly that I am mandated by my Christian beliefs to treat you with absolute respect, absolute dignity, and I find it very abhorrent to speak in ways that are pejorative about you as a person. To me, we're talking about, with this military thing, we're talking about a public policy issue. I don't care what your sexual orientation is, if you are in jobs or work with me or anything else.
So what is abhorrent then about a gay or lesbian service member who focuses on their job and not on their sexual orientation serving in the military in an open and honest way? What's wrong with a linguist who receives pages of translation
on
their
desk? Fine, I can tell you what's wrong.
Translating something for the benefit of helping us to win against our enemies in the field.
That sounds very reasonable, except that's not the culture of the United States military. in the culture of the United States military, Sean.
Do you see the culture of the military as a uniform and unchanging fixture?
Sean, if you were to look at the United States military not as a social experiment, but as what they are and what their purpose is, the United States Congress wrote the primary purpose of the armed forces is to prevail in combat.
Here's the point. You're going back to that point, but I want you to deal with a very practical, specific case, which, again, there's been a lot written on this particular subject, and that is the need for linguists, the fact that I don't know exactly what the number is, but many linguists have been drummed out of the service because of the don't ask, don't tell. They reveal they were homosexual.
Why do you use the word
in
drummed?
In a war. Well, I don't know. It's just a term I use. Thrown out, kicked out, held, dishonorably discharged, whatever term you want. But my point to you is, if you want to win a war, don't you need all of the ammunition, intellectual and otherwise? Don't you need all the help you can get? And if there's someone who is an American who wants to serve their country, who may have the smarts, the intellectual capacity to break a code, to save lives, to win a war, why would you not let that person do it?
Great question.
And are you saying that person who has all of those abilities would not be smart enough or could not control his or her own urges strongly enough that they couldn't go into a shower room and do a shower without ogling the guy next to him or trying to play a little grab ass with him?
The first
half, you're saying? Don't they have the ability to do that?
That's the problem with the whole debate. Is the first half of what you just said is an honest question I can agree with. But the second half, where you did the whole grab ass and that kind of thing that you just did, that is not my attitude, and that is wrong. That is not the reason to oppose
this. When you talk about the culture, I mean, the culture is part of what I think you're talking about is the culture is that people of a same sex, they live in close proximity to one another, in close quarters. They go to the showers. They go to the restrooms. They do all of these things
That's
together.
That's the finding of the U.S. Congress.
And your concern is that in the conduct of their lives,
it's not my
they
concern.
They cannot go in the shower without somehow wanting to hit on their bunkmate.
It's not, Bruce, my concern. It is the concern after extensive hearings of the United States Congress that's a problem.
I think that's absolutely hogwash.
It's hogwash? You want me to read it? I've got it in front of me.
I don't
it's
want
the
you
United
to read it
States
you've
Congress.
Read it about eight times tonight. I think
I haven't
it's
read
hogwash.
Anything.
I think it's hogwash.
But the United States Congress wrote
not,
it.
Because the point is you're not dealing with a practical situation.
Okay, here's the question then, Bruce.
If what you say is true, Bruce, why
must it be slammed through? Why not let the Congress genuinely look into this? Why does it have to be slammed through?
The whole purpose of the Pentagon report was to look at how to make an orderly transition.
Why do you have to slam it through in a lame duck Congress? Why can it not be debated and
because a federal judge in California is ready to throw it out and Congress is responding to it.
And the multi-million member United States military is now going to be run by one single lawyer.
We've been debating this for 20 years. Nothing's getting slammed through. And frankly, in the Senate, there'll be a bunch of people who won't vote to go for foreclosure, so it won't actually come to a vote. And it'll be perfect because it's a great fundraising thing for conservatives.
And it will be,
they don't want to change it because they raise money on it.
Wrong.
Not because it's the best thing for the military, but they can raise money on it. They don't care.
Chicago. We're back. Tim in Chicago, you're on Beyond the Beltway. One more segment. This is it. You're our first caller. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yes. I'm in Chicago, Illinois.
Yep.
First of all, I'm independent of any gay and lesbian group.
Yep.
And no one's lobbying into me. The panelists, though, need to know that developments are underway to handle the situation of don't ask, don't tell, since I'm a developer of methods affecting the don't ask, don't tell from an international conference starting in a presentation of mine. This was back in March of 2008. In my business model that I presented at that international conference with U.S. patent application number, it ends in 201, which was filed in June of 2007.
Yeah.
I reported the information on there that does affect the method that the military would have to use. So what's happening now is the next update that I did was in January of 2010, I showed the similar business model with the appropriate redactions at the Society of Photonics Industry, which supports the development of our healthcare with imaging instrumentation.
Yeah.
Then
so
the last
is,
update
get,
I did
this
was get, October
this 2000. This is getting a little too far afield of where we're with the remaining hours or moments we have. Let's go to Chris listening on the Internet, and he is from Auburn, Illinois. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
I'm retired Navy. Your panelists who want this, who want to let the homosexuals in, I want to know if they're going to run down to the recruiting stations and enlist as soon as it's legal.
Well, after the judicial ruling on October 22nd, a large number of gay and lesbians who had been discharged who had never served before went back and enlisted and did exactly that.
I'm straight, but I'm too old to enlist.
Well, I'll say this in Sean's defense. Sean and I completely disagree on this. And Sean is clearly physically fit and would be incredibly an intelligent guy to have in the military. But the fact that Sean does or does not want to enlist isn't the issue. And I don't think it shows that he's a phony in his opinion. I disagree with his opinion, but I don't think that's a reason to judge him.
Let's go to John in Crete, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Bruce. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like a ground rule. Could I please make my statement and defense and then any comments? Is that fair?
Well, let's see how long it takes you to do it, because we're running out of time.
Okay, good. Yeah. Actually, a black man could be prohibited from the military. A woman could be prohibited. If the black man, not because of his race, if he commits an act of homosexuality. A woman cannot be prohibited from the military because she's a woman, but he commits an act of lesbianism. And the Catholic Church, the supreme arbiter of truth, has 70 million Catholics. We do not want our tax dollars or anything promoting homosexuality. Okay, my comments.
All right, let's let Sean respond to that.
If you're familiar with Catholic doctrine, I grew up as a Catholic. Vatican II found that being homosexual was permissible, provided that one didn't take action on that. By enlisting in the military and simply stating that one is part of the GLBT community, one is not saying that they're going to go ahead and take action on those urges. They may very well just go in there and do their job perfectly well and assist people in defeating those who they're at combat with.
And they can today. I don't disagree.
Let's go to a Bob in Highland, Indiana. Go ahead. You're on the air.
No, you can't serve.
Hello. Hi there, Bruce.
Yes, Bob.
I don't understand in the very first place where a federal judge or any federal judicial power could make such a ruling, because in the Constitution of the United States, if you were to read it, and I'd be happy to read it to your guests if they like, the provision number or requirement number 13 and number 16 of the powers vested to Congress clearly shows Congress will make rules that pertain to the regulation of the military, and it says nothing about judicial review over Congress's rules.
Let's let Sean respond
to that,
and
then
correct.
We'll go to your second point.
Congress cannot, however, enact rules or legislation which are considered unconstitutional. And in the judge's ruling on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, found that due process was violated, that the First Amendment was violated, and that the Fifth Amendment of self-incrimination was violated.
Caller, are you a former military?
No, I'm not. But
well, the second question. Go ahead with your second question.
None of those things Sean just said are true of military people.
Go ahead.
My second point is, then, if this is the case, if unconstitutionality is the standard, civil rules, unconstitutional rules, who's to say that a few years down the road there won't be a call for collective bargaining in the military?
Whoa.
And the soldiers of the military, because the Constitution and federal rules of the past say that workers have a right to form unions, who's to say the soldiers won't one day want to form a union and that they could walk out on strike in the middle of a military. It's just ridiculous.
Mary?
Caller, you don't realize that Mary is here in the studio laughing at you. When you said the thing about unionism, she laughed. And that is exactly this whole debate. Mary, do you realize that in the European militaries where this homosexual thing has been introduced, the primary thing is exactly how you introduced this program, that the purpose of the military is to promote the social aspects, and unionization is one of the primary issues the
Quick
Denmark military
First of all,
has
You're putting
unionized.
Words in my mouth. You're putting Sorry. Words in my mouth. It isn't the purpose of the military is military. No, but we have we politics and strength and military, they work hand in hand, and that and the
politics have no part in the military. Your politics harms military.
You mean that politics is not war by another means?
Politics
is war
part
by
of the
another
military.
Means. Military action is politics
That's,
by another
no,
means.
That's no, the part of
yes,
the military
That's straight
is
up
to
doctrine.
Combat. The United States Congress says the it,
no,
purpose,
the
of, the
purpose
military
of the military
is
to
combat.
Achieve goals.
I'm in
is
politics.
To achieve goals.
We're talking about politics,
no, the,
but
the
that's
purpose of the military
not
is to achieve goals.
The military. You're making this into a semantic argument rather than
not.
An ideological argument, and I think that part of the importance of looking at this issue is whether or not constitutional doctrine is being found.
We are out of time. Our thanks to our guests, Lee Newcomb and Mary Hartigan and Sean Bennett. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks to Tom Veracruz for assistance in the production of this program. I don't think we changed any minds tonight. More heat than perhaps light, but read more. The issue is not going to go away quickly. 1-800-723-8289. Write it down. Call in early next week. Until then, Bruce Dumont, good night from Chicago.